Welcome back to the Buffalo Bread Podcast, coming to you live from the recovery ward of 1JJ Drive. I am under the weather, and I apologize already if this is a somewhat brief podcast, but we do want to keep everyone waiting for yet another preseason game. Dan, this is a interesting time of year because I think it's Overreaction Wednesday. What would you say about that?
Well, based on the news that Bills Mafia got about Matt Milano today, I think the only appropriate reaction is that we all find our favorite Sarah McLachlan song. Mine is I Will Remember You, and we just jam on it, repeat as we all mourn the loss of Matt Milano for what is very likely another football season. So, I mean, listen, JJ, I think in all seriousness, there's going to be a very real impact to the loss of Milano. We know this. We experienced it last year. I think what we should do our best to do is parse out the real impact of Milano versus where we want to go to in our feelings, particularly after that first preseason game against Chicago, which is probably an even darker place after the Bills got waxed in that game, right? So listen, there is useful information to pull from that game. There's real information to talk about with Milano. My friend, I say we dive right in. We swim through these dark and muddy waters and come out on the other side as Andy Dufresne, clean and ready for what is hopefully a rebound preseason matchup.
If I remember correctly, he came out covered in human feces, so he wasn't quite clean until the rains hit him.
Correct.
And it was a Shawshank Redemption.
And it was. Good. I'm glad you're on top of your movie references. This pod just would not be the same without that.
Well, so, I'm on top of my movie references, not quite on top of days of the week. I realized after saying Wednesday, it's in fact Thursday. So that's how my head cold situation is affecting me. But I agree. I think that it's sort of a downtime this whole week. We have the pallor of the, terrible blowout preseason loss to the Bears, which doesn't matter, but it just doesn't feel good as a fan base, followed by Matt Milano on the Tre'Davious White career trajectory, which is to miss 10 times more games than you play in for a few consecutive seasons and then be unceremoniously cut after what was a rise to, what we believed could have been an incredible career as a Buffalo Bill. So it's just, I'm already putting him in the rear view. And I know that's bleak, but he is over the age of 30. He is now going to be two consecutive seasons missing most of the season, if not all of the season. And I think injury prone is absolutely appropriate at this point, considering in his, five seasons or six seasons, he has had three season ending injuries. So it's like when 50% of your seasons have been ended by injury and two of them prematurely, I just can't see how you'd have anything other than that tag.
Well, and I think too, right now, everyone is trying to think positively about a return date for him. And optimistically, people are like, oh, December potentially. But we talked about it last pod. He still wasn't looking right from his leg injury from last season. Right. The instincts with this dude are there. They're always going to be there. He's got one of the best motors and one of the best like levels of intuition that you could possibly find at the off-ball linebacker spot. ESPN, pending his health, had him ranked as the third best off-ball linebacker in the league behind only Fred Warner out of San Francisco and Patrick McQueen out of Baltimore.
Didn't Patrick Queen move to a different team this offseason,
I thought he was. Oh, is he a Steeler now?
I think
Baltimore? Did he go to Baltimore from Baltimore to Pittsburgh?
I think he moved. Yeah, I think he moved from Baltimore. But I mean, regardless, he's an incredible linebacker.
Baltimore to Pittsburgh.
Now
that
Pittsburgh.
Is
yeah, yeah. So yeah, Patrick Queen. That's some incredible company to be mentioned with the likes of. I would say I agree with you. I think his greatest ability is his preternatural sense of play flow. Like he understands either through film study and tirelessly kind of, viewing his opponent or by just like kind of a sixth sense that, you can't really describe, knowing where the ball is going to be and working through the trash of misdirection and pulling guards and whatever it might be to just make explosive blow up plays. I love Matt Milano. He is like the only other player on the team besides Josh Allen and Greg Rousseau whose jersey I would consider buying right now. And so I don't have a good feeling about it. I don't think he's going to return this season. I think if he is, he's going to look like Von Miller last season as like a shell. And then everyone's going to be just hopeful for 2025. And at that point, he's going to be like 32 years old. And so it's a wonder of like when one of his greatest abilities is that, you know, ball flow and sense of the play, that ages pretty well. So there is some hope to have. But that ability is tethered strongly to his also above average athleticism, which is the piece that could start to fade.
Yeah, absolutely. And he plays such a high octane, high contact brand of football too. You wonder that even if he can make it back on the field this season, how these last 2 years of injuries may change his play style. And then it's an open question of if we get a different version of Matt Milano, how does that fit into this Buffalo Bills defense? Because listen, we are dealing with the departure of Poyer and Hyde, but I think, and they have been synonymous with the McDermott culture and this Buffalo Bills defense. I think even more than those two, there are two other guys on this roster, one being Matt Milano, the other being Taron Johnson, that are even more to me a part of this fabric and connective tissue of what this defense tries to do. And we saw it last year, and it's easy to take that Kansas City divisional game in the playoffs and point to how they exploited the middle of the field in both the run game and the pass game and be like, see, that's what Milano does. That's an oversimplification. This dude is sideline to sideline. He shuts down each third of the field to the best of his ability, and he covers so much ground because of that athleticism you talked about, and he allows guys to focus on a very narrow path of what they need to do both up front and in the secondary because he can be so omnipresent at so many different levels and sections of the field. He is a nuclear deterrent when he is out there for guys coming across the middle and run plays straight up the gap to the middle of the field at the second level. And without him there, and with who we believe will be his replacement as Dorian Williams there, you've got to believe it's going to be open season on a lot of play action against this Buffalo Bills offense to open up spots in the middle of the field until Williams can prove that he can take that first instinctual read that he loves to go with and maybe hold off just a beat, just a half a second to get a better read on the play before ultimately making his move and implementing his reaction.
I have a suspicion that Dorian Williams will be unceremoniously benched for Baylen Specter, Edifuan Olufosio, or Deion Jones within three games. Just because I haven't seen it, I think that he's looked a little bit more poised, and he's looked a little bit more, because we described him as a heat-seeking missile who had no guidance system. Right, like he just sort of went in a direction as fast as humanly possible, and it was impressively fast, but it was never the right place. Like he made full speed mistakes as a rookie, and I think that there's of course great potential there. He certainly has all the athletic tools, but I just wonder. I think the reports coming out of training camp and what we saw in preseason so far is that he still has incredible gaps in his ability to know where to be on the field. And I just feel like even if he's the most athletically gifted of all the backups, that it's likely he's going to mistake himself out of a starting job, even if he gets it right off the jump. And as a follow on to that, to be positive and hopeful, think about exactly 1 year ago today and us talking about the linebacker core and being like, this team is so absolutely screwed if anything happens to Matt Milano. And what an absolute delight Terrell Bernard has been. He's a vocal leader. That's the thing, that Milano never was that. Milano was always dependable. It was always lead by example. But he was never like the heart of that defense. And Terrell Bernard, as a second-year player, stepped flawlessly into that role without even playing a preseason game week one and didn't, you know, give up that position the rest of the year. And he's poised, and again, the reports out of training camp, reports out of preseason so far, is that he is pretty much ready to go as the quarterback of the defense and has taken a huge step forward in the offseason. So, I mean, oh my gosh, that's the one thing that, like, if this injury happened in camp last year, I think Bills Mafia would be like flipping over cars and lighting city blocks on fire, because there would be already Tremaine Edmonds had departed, and then Matt Milano's gone, and it's like, well, we literally have no linebacker on the field at all at any level. And now with Terrell Bernard, it's like, this really, really sucks. I'm very sad, but at least we have that guy.
I was going to say, the cupboard is not completely bare. And I mean, Bernard, I think, is an amazing comparison point, because we're talking about Williams right now like we were talking about Bernard. Man, he's got some plus athletic ability, but can he really get out there and do what Edmonds did for us? And he did what Edmonds did for us and more, especially with his ability to create turnovers for this Buffalo Bills defense. Dorian Williams, if he has a Bernard-like jump, Williams and Bernard, I think, immediately become the most athletic, most dynamic linebacker duo in the league, bar none, right? But that's a lot of positivity, a lot of hopium at this point, and a lot of faith that you're taking on a Buffalo Bills coaching staff that has, granted, developed a lot of linebackers, Bernard being amongst them, Milano being, of course, amongst them, maybe the best amongst them, extending the career of AJ Klein. Terrell Dotson got a great payday from Seattle this year because of how he was able to develop in this linebacker room in Buffalo. Like, it, I understand that Baltimore is used to be considered largely linebacker U in the NFL, but you could really make an argument that the Bills and the program they have in place in that particular position room, maybe 1A behind that club. So if there is any silver lining to this, it is the Bills have found next man up at this position for many years. And to your earlier point, JJ, we've had to do it without Milano before, and we've had success, albeit fleeting success by the time we get to Kansas City, but we've had success in being able to cover up for his loss. And this is going to have to be a situation where we do it again. It's just going to be a different guy. It's not going to be AJ Klein this year. It's going to be Dorian Williams.
Well, and I think too that one of the other factors I'd considered as soon as I saw that news break is, you know, what and how does Cole Bishop factor into this? How long is his injury? It looks like they've been describing it as week to week, and so that's pretty hopeful for early season return. And if so, how can they do, you know, what can they do with some dime looks to take some of the pressure off of Dorian Williams in coverage? Because he bites so hard on play action that he always leaves tight ends wide open in the middle of the field. I think that's something that Cole Bishop can shut down. And so is it a situation where, kind of like they did with Poyer last year, Dorian comes off the field, Terrell Bernard is the sole linebacker on the field, and they have an extra safety in Cole Bishop, you know, play those run fit slash play action looks?
Absolutely. I mean, they protected Terrell Dotson a lot of times with that dime package as well after Milano went out. So I think there's some utility to it. I think the trepidation I have about it is that the safety room is not as deep as it was. I think Cole Bishop is an ideal fit for that particular role. But the question is, right now with DeMar Hamlin being ahead of him on the depth chart, how safe do we feel about what is behind Bishop? Should he be put into that box dime look in the safety position? In certain positions, I think Hamlin has taken tremendous steps this offseason, but I don't feel good about him being the next starting safety next to Rapp. I don't even feel great about Rapp either. Rapp has had some really nice plays, but it still feels like, when you're particularly looking at game tape and you're looking at some of the footage coming out of training camp, he still feels like he's playing out of position. It feels like he's playing center field free safety when really this dude's a strong safety and feels more comfortable and aligned in the box. So, yes, I think Bishop has to be a part of the answer if he's healthy. Otherwise, why do you go out and get a guy like that? But I feel less confident about what will be behind him than I did last year when they put Poyer in that position.
Dude, all I have to say is two words: Cam Lewis. Cam Lewis.
Dude, Cam Lewis.
UB alum Cam Lewis. Horns up, motherfucker. Huh? NSFW.
I'll put the explicit rating on this pod now.
Yeah, no, Cam Lewis is going to save us all. He can play every single position on the defense, including interior tackle and edge rusher. We don't worry about it. Just stick Cam Lewis wherever we need him.
JJ, I have a Has Justin Simmons been signed by anyone yet?
He has not. I think he did a free agent visit with some team recently, and it made me kind of anxious, but I don't think he signed anything.
Oh my God. I'm looking at SpotTrack real quick. I don't see him anywhere listed as available anymore. We'll have to dig a little bit deeper into that, but yeah. But yeah, man, I mean, listen, it is the type of adversity that we are used to experiencing over the course of the past few seasons. Losing a key portion, a key piece of this defense, having to figure it out with next man up. And listen, as a Bills fan base, Bills Mafia, we always tend to rag on Brandon Bean when he uses a random third round pick on yet another linebacker or yet another safety or running back. And for the most part, some of these guys tend to come through after a little bit of seasoning and a little bit of work in the program. So you just got to hope at this point, especially where our salary cap situation is and what is available on the free agent market, which is not a lot, that the program in Buffalo is still going to churn out the next guy up that can help fill this hole. And that's all you can hope for at this point, right?
The answer
is not outside the team.
I was just going to say the corpse of Shaq Leonard is still out there.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Poor dude has been beaten up by he had multiple back surgeries at this point.
Yeah. So yeah, the answer is not outside the clubhouse currently. The answer has to be in that room. So yeah.
Sure.
So we'll see how it plays out. JJ, on the news on the field, the Buffalo Bills played a game, albeit a meaningless preseason game. I think it was very telling for a lot of fans leading into it that the starters, particularly Josh Allen and the offensive starters, would play for the first quarter, according to Sean McDermott leading into the game. He was a man true to his word. He pulled Josh Allen mid-drive as the quarters turned over. And there was some interesting things to parse about that. Now, listen, I want to, before we engage with what I know we're about to engage with, which is this offensive line sucks, I do want to remind you that after last year's preseason game against Pittsburgh, you and I both said, freaking Deion Dawkins is trash and Spencer Brown needs to go. Then both of those guys ended up having their best career seasons in a Bills jersey last year. All right. So always moderation, always a little bit of grain of salt when it comes to preseason. All right. But there are, I think, some really, really very real important things that we can pick apart, both on the positive and negative from that first preseason game. So JJ, where do you want to start? And why is it the offensive line?
It's always the offensive line. It's always the trenches, brother. Like, you know that. I could even just say trenches, period. Like, that I think is the story of this game. I think that the offensive line for the Bills and the defensive line versus the Chicago offensive line, you know, in that game, those were the kind of, it felt like deja vu in the worst way, because we had our offensive line struggling to protect quarterbacks, and we had, well, they did better in pass protection. The starting and the second unit did pretty good in pass protection, terrible in run blocking, which is peculiar because, you know, I think that they were much better at run blocking. They were a top five or six unit with yards before contact for running backs last year. And so to have so many returners in that line and have them struggle, I think it may have been more about scheme than it was skill. And we can talk about that a little bit. But I mean, the fact that they let Shane Buechele get knocked out of the league for the season was rough. He also was responsible for probably five of his six sacks by just not knowing what to do or where to pull the trigger or how to get the ball out fast enough. He was running around back there like, I don't know, like a wacky doodle. It was nuts. Let's see. Deion Dawkins, you know, A to A minus. Spencer Brown, B minus. I'd say Connor McGovern, C plus maybe. Osiris Torrance, A+. That dude just always seems to know exactly what to do and how to be. And he stonewalled some really good inside rushes and twists. But that's all kind of in pass protection. And then David Edwards at left guard, B-ish. I think it was an up and down performance for the starting unit. Every unit below them was like across the board, like a C-. Like, it was, I recognize that they didn't have any schemed run fits. They basically were just zone left, zone right, power left and power right, which Chicago seemed to very early key on. And just that's as basic That's the most basic football you can do. That's like Pop Warner stuff. And so to have an NFL team know how to run fit that in a way that is meaningful, especially since the Bills, I think, ran it 80% of the time on first down, I'm not at all surprised. They didn't have tackle wrap. They didn't have any pulls or traps. They didn't have any complex line schemes. There was no real scraping of any duo. You know, they love to play duo, which is both sides of the center have a double team, and then one of the players scrapes up to the second level to create some creases and seams. They didn't do any duo blocking in this. So much of the stuff that is the absolute bread and butter of that offensive line with run blocking was just completely absent. And so I think that when Bills Mafia look at it on a rewatch with all 22, I was like, oh, okay. They got their lunch eaten because they weren't trying to really create any extra angles. They weren't actually creating favorable matchups or angles for their linemen. So each of those five starting linemen have specific skills and traits that make them better, and they weren't playing to their strengths. That's one of the Aaron Cromer things is we're going to do run design to get Spencer Brown on the move because he's so athletic. We're going to do run design to get Osiris Torrance in a phone booth with a lot of clutter because he's a people mover and nobody can, you know, break him up at the point of attack. So I wasn't so worried about it. I think it'll be really telling in the Arizona game. And any day before that, I'm not going to really stress about the offensive line because I've been here before. I do have concerns. I think that I really expected Cedric Van Pran Granger to like come in and challenge to try to move up the depth chart, but he is like fourth right now in the center lineup. I think that Will Clapp and Alec Anderson both snapped balls before he did in the game, which is somewhat worrying. He hasn't really made too much of a move in training camp, so I wonder about him. Because I was even hoping he would challenge, you know, Connor McGovern coming up the ranks with his impressive collegiate career. But he had his lunch eaten on a couple of snaps in that game.
Yeah, I agree with you on the line. I'm not panicked. I think the very limited amount of time, to your point, 80% of the time they're running a very vanilla scheme. And when they did try to, on occasion, run wrap with either Dawkins or Brown, it was a matter of timing, right? It was just a matter of timing and those guys getting there. It looked like a squad that hadn't played a meaningful football game since the winter. Not to oversimplify, but that's what it was. They were literally kicking off the rust, and they were playing a team that was playing their second game of the season already because the Bills were, or the Bears were involved in the, albeit weather-shortened, Hall of Fame game. So, yeah, they looked a little bit sharper than the Bills. They were a little bit more ready to play because they have been playing games for longer than the Bills squad has. This was the epitome of, let's see what we got. Let's shake out some of the cobwebs and let's see what it is that we really need to work on. I have faith in the scheme, even if I don't have faith at every level of this personnel grouping. But I agree with you on a couple of things. I wasn't looking necessarily for what the starting five was going to do because I knew that Cromer and Brady weren't going to want to put a whole lot of stuff on tape in this particular game. This was just about getting their guys ready. But I wanted to see what the second and third units did as far as their one-on-one matchups went. Because at the end of the day, you can scheme as much as you want to scheme, but this is a game, especially in the trenches, about big dudes pushing other big dudes, as we have talked about. And I wanted to see if our dudes could push their dudes in any meaningful way. And I think on the second and third unit in pass protection, this is a squad top to bottom that played well, which makes me feel good about the long-term health this year of our Lord and Savior Josh Allen. I think when it came to the run game at every level, though, the thing that stuck out to me is that our guys were not winning their one-on-one matchups at any kind with any kind of regularity. It's interesting that you bring up Van Pran Granger because I can't figure out what his trajectory is right now. He's been pretty much relegated to the third unit, but he played really well in that Bears game. He's clearly, especially in pass pro, PFF, and take that with a big grain of salt, PFF rated him with an 81, which was the highest pass protection grade any Bills offensive lineman got first, second, or third unit in that game against the Bears. So it's interesting to me that they continue to ride with Alec Anderson, who I always thought was more of their Ryan Bates, their backup to everyone everywhere, particularly on the interior. And, you know, we saw some sloppy handoffs today when the second unit was on and Alec Anderson was hiking the ball to Mitch Trubisky. So it makes you wonder why they've got this everyman sort of Swiss Army knife in Anderson. They're really, really trying to pigeonhole him into that center role, where to me, his value is all over that interior. And there seems to be a reluctance to move up Van Pran Granger to the second unit in that backup center role. I can't quite figure it out, but JJ, it's something I'm going to be looking for in the Pittsburgh game. I want to see if VPG gets a little bit more time with the second unit at center and if he gets elevated, because I think he's earned it.
I want to actually see if Alec Anderson gets time with the second unit, because I'm going to throw on my tinfoil hat and declare that Alec Anderson may be a pre-cut trade, because Brandon Bean always likes to shell off one of the offensive line depth, better offensive line depth when he feels like he has it, for a fourth, fifth, you know, sixth round draft pick. So there's a chance that if, you know, if they're pushing Alec Anderson up the lines as a center is a little bit more valuable than a guard in this league. It may be, especially one who has center guard flexibility, it may be a situation where they're looking for opportunities to move him, because I don't think the team, you know, having used a early fifth round pick on Van Pran Granger, is in any position to try to get rid of VPG, regardless of how he's kind of not necessarily moved up any of the lines.
Can I tell you something?
Yep.
If Brandon Bean trades three centers that were on either the first or second unit of this squad within a 7 month period, I may riot.
He did, but he didn't trade Mitch Morse. He cut him. He traded one. He cut one.
You know what I mean? Sorry, sorry.
He'd be trading two and cutting one if he moves on from three centers.
Yeah. It is so hard to find offensive line depth. And I listen, what you say is totally rational and makes sense. But like, are we really going to continue to cut into our offensive line depth more for a fourth round pick that we'll probably use on another nickel corner? Like, I just like,
or
it just
a linebacker
seemed, or a running back.
Yeah.
It seems counterintuitive to me at this point that you've worked so hard as an organization over the past 7-8 years to get the line right. You get the line right finally last year. You immediately cut in to a lot of that value by cutting Mitch Morse, trading Ryan Bates. And you say, and you tell the fan base, well, we got this guy in Connor McGovern who played a lot of center in college, and we think he can do it here. And oh, by the way, Alec Anderson, who we drafted and stashed a season ago, he can play every position and he is going to solidify the interior. And now you're going to kick that guy to the curb too. It feels at some point like, again, hubris, if that is in fact the case. But it kind of makes sense as why VPG is not getting more second unit time, because he looks better than Anderson at center. And Anderson looks like an absolute beast when he plays either of the interior guard positions.
Yeah.
Like, he's obviously much more comfortable in one of those two roles.
Well, and even to roll back and take off my tinfoil hat and say that maybe Alec Anderson is the first off the bench interior backup for all three positions. They're moving on from Will Clapp. They're stashing Van Pran Granger as a depth, you know, lineman, because he is young. I think that's valid, especially in the pivot. You have to be able to make all of the line calls and protection adjustments, and that's the hardest part of the job. That's why most college centers wash out of the league, you know, if they're not high round picks and haven't been vetted to be able to do that, is the complex protection schemes, making sure you're identifying the Mike linebacker. All of that is a challenge and a huge step up from even pro style systems in the college ranks. So it could be that, you know, Alec Anderson's first off the bench and they're just trying to get him ready for that in all of those interior spots. But yeah, I think that, you know, on the offensive line, we both, you know, made some observations. It starts and ends with the line on offense. If you don't have protection, if you don't have holes opening up, you know, nothing's going to happen. So it'll be interesting to see in the upcoming game against Pittsburgh what they're able to get done. Specifically, to your point, with a little bit more time to be coordinated and a little bit more chemistry to be able to work together, because it seemed like that was a little disjointed.
Yeah. I did have a chance to watch some of the All-22 on this game, because that is where I am at. I am breaking down film on preseason games. And I'm a total goner. And I, you know, rewatched the game through the all 22 lens. And then I wanted to spotlight a player. And I decided that's something I'm going to do here moving forward, is I'm just going to spotlight a dude. And of course, from this game, it was Keon Coleman, because it was his first live game action in the pros. And we wanted to see what he looked like. And listen, I think, like, I see it. I see the vision for what he can be. The athleticism, the catch radius, it's all there. He needs to have more concise movements in his routes, especially on his release. He's a little bit unfurled. He's a little bit kind of gangly, right? A little bit unwieldy at the point of release. He's not yet crisp on those clear out routes. And all of you folks that are thankful that Gabe Davis is off the squad for his on-again, off-again relationship with being good at football, something Gabe Davis was excellent at was running the clear out. Now, Josh would throw the clear out in which when he shouldn't have, but running the clear out is so important for what Brady wants to do in the middle parts of the short area and intermediate parts of the field. Because on that clear out route, if you can get your outside release and draw your guy to the boundary with you, it opens up a wide array of options across the middle of the field, which is what Brady wants to do. And Coleman is clearly, based on my rewatch of the game, going to be asked to fill some of that Gabe Davis clear out role. And he's not yet there on some of the selling guys on his outside release. So he's got a lot of growth, but the ability is there. He just catches everything. He's a magnet for the ball. Like, I don't understand how he comes down with some of these throws.
This is a concern I have. And I had this concern with the pick when they picked him in the draft, but I have it even more now that we've seen some film of him playing with Josh Allen. Is Josh Allen absolutely, I think Josh Allen's in love with the way that Keon catches the ball. And so I'm worried that, like you said, that Josh Allen would throw ill-advised clear out routes that aren't the actual design of the play, that's all we're going to see game after game with Keon Cole. And like,
it's going to be a massive temptation.
Yeah, he's going to make some of those catches, and that's only going to further, you know, poison Josh's mind.
Yeah. They also really locked in on Coleman on a couple of offensive series in the red zone as well.
Yeah.
Like, they clearly have a plan for him in the red zone, in the Gabe Davis role, as a deep threat. But they were flashing him across the middle of the field with some short and intermediate area stuff too. They're trying to build up his route tree. They're trying to get him to work on his mechanics, which, listen, he was a very raw product when it came to that stuff. But he does the thing that you need a wide receiver to do, which is catch the ball. And the Bills are hoping that he can develop, or they can teach him the rest of what he needs to know so he can grow into that true X wide receiver one role that this team desperately needs.
And by all accounts and reports, his football IQ is kind of through the roof. He likes to know every single position's, you know, route assignment on every play. And so even if his mechanics aren't quite there, the mental side of the game doesn't seem too big for him so far.
Absolutely. It's like the opposite of the Kyer Elam situation on the other side of the ball,
right,
where he came with all of the raw athletic ability you could possibly ask for. But learning this system and learning this scheme took time. It seems like Coleman, while he is a good athlete in his own right, it seems like he's far more advanced in his understanding of the playbook, the game, and the concepts. He's said it a bunch of times in camp interviews and in post-game interviews. He's like, we don't learn positions. Like, we don't learn, like, who's the slot and who's the Z and who's the X. We learn concepts. We learn routes. And that's how Brady is installing this offense in the wide receiver room. And I think that's great. And I think Coleman is eating it up. So his skill set, the mechanics and the technique are going to eventually catch up to what his raw athleticism and his football acumen allow him to do now, just based on raw ability. And if he can put it all together, I see it, man. They may have found their Mike Evans. Yeah.
No, it's good. I'm excited for him. I like to see. And I think that it's, for me, the thing that makes the Keon Coleman pick more palatable is that you have Curtis Samuel and Khalil Shakir, who are so dependable, who are where they need to be, who are technicians with their route tree, and who are speedy after the catch and Swiss Army knives in any position on the field. So, like, when you have those two options, You don't need Keon to step in and be Justin Jefferson.
Dude, Khalil Shakir is so automatic. He's so automatic. It makes you wonder, and the only thing I left that game thinking was, like, what is the role for Dalton Kincaid, right?
Yeah.
Like, we are all expecting Kincaid to take this big step, and him and Josh have displayed some really good chemistry in camp, but there's only so much ball to go around, and Josh has some very tempting weapons, I think, at each level of the field. You wonder if this room, and I'm going to include Knox and Kincaid when I say pass catcher room, you wonder if it's going to be a matchup-based thing where we're coming in with a squad that's weak at the second level, they're weak on the roof of the defense. Keon, run deep. Mac, run deep, right? You wonder if they're going to try to exploit a team with a weak linebacker core with some Shakir and Samuel over the middle, right? Like, they have the ability to really play matchup offense on a game-to-game basis in a way they haven't had the ability to in a very long time. So it'll be interesting to see. Listen, it all hinges on the running game getting going, of course, so that it can open up some of those parts of the field by forcing defenses to condense. But we'll see how it goes, man. There was hope in that 33-6 shellacking that I saw on film. And what I'm trying to pay attention to for the Pittsburgh game is, do we see the next evolution of the wrinkles? Do we see a little bit more Kincaid in the Pittsburgh game? Do we see a little bit more of those duo, dart, tackle, wrap combinations off the offensive line? And do we see the timing of the offensive line a little bit better? I think for me, those are the things I'm keeping an eye on. Who's the next focal point in the pass catcher room? And do we see the offensive line able to execute some of those higher end run gap concepts that we got so accustomed to at the end of last season?
Yeah. Well, and I think too that the kind of the conceptual place of this Pittsburgh game in the preseason kind of schedule is interesting because it's the kind of thing where you're probably going to have your starters play a little bit more. They did a shared joint practice today down in Pittsburgh. And so, if they choose to have their starters play in this game and not next week, this is the game where they're going to want to like try to install some things, not have a full game plan, but rather at least try to like have some of the key concepts of the core bread and butter pieces of the offense that they do in a very vanilla way, without the interesting window dressing of formations and shifts and motions that I think they're probably going to save for the full season, but rather, you know, let's get the proper guard and tackles working together on a couple of combo blocks and things like that, that you can only really replicate in live game settings. And so I'm really interested to see that too, is, are we going to have a situation where they do some more things, but it's still pretty basic. And I think that's probably most likely, is that it's going to be a still very basic and vanilla scheme with maybe some additional techniques that were not on showcase in the previous game.
I agree. I'll be watching for sure, and we'll be potting about it for sure.
Absolutely.
But JJ, I think that's a good place to leave it. So for all of you mourning with us and listening to this pod, like, share, and subscribe wherever you get your podcast. Soon to be on YouTube. More information about that coming up on the next pod. Apple and Spotify. And as always, go Bills.
Go Bills.